God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right, the Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. You can raise your hand or your virtual hand. I am trying to look out if I see anyone. All right, I don't think I see any. Alrighty. If you're shy, you can, if you would like, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are discussing step 12, part 2, and we have Anna and Arisa. So welcome to the both of you. I'm going to read the first paragraph on page, oh thank you. That's going to be on... page is that on? Page 96. Sorry about that. And then the speakers will share. First reading is, oh yeah, step 12, part 2. Carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Suppose you are now making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult somebody else. I think Anna's first.
Yes. Hi, I'm Anna. I'm alcoholic. Thank you guys for having me tonight. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thanks, Arisa, for asking me. So I'm not totally sure. I mean, like, I can get as nerdy as they come in terms of wordsmithing here with the reading, but I'm going to just do my best to share, like you said, and offer some also of my experience. So, I always think it's funny because, when I was looking at what the paragraphs were that you read, I often am struck by when I have read this far into a chapter called Working with Others, and it has all of this stuff that I'm supposed to talk about with the alcoholic. Like, if you've never read it before and this is your first time here at a meeting or at this meeting, welcome. I'll just say that the first part has a lot of stuff, like a lot of stuff to the point where it really is helpful to consider if you're actually doing that at the first time that you meet with someone and talk with them, you know, in AA today. Because I can tell you, like, it's not the same thing as just grabbing coffee. There's a lot of stuff that they talk about in there, right? And then I always get to this point. It's like, suppose now you're making the second visit, and it just really drives home for me, which I know is kind of like a backwards way to start, but it really drives home for me that the first part was all the first visit, you know, like that's the first thing I always notice is like, oh my God, everything up until this point is like, I should be laying that groundwork right away. And I think there can be, you know, depending on where I've been in my sobriety, I have a tendency to, get attached to the idea of whether or not I have sponsees. I don't know if anyone can relate. I've been told that having, you know, sponsoring people is crucial for my recovery, right? And so I need to get sponsees so that I'm okay, you know? And I think there can be a tendency to not scare people away, which is of course like rooted in trying to be helpful. But I think it's also really important reading this chapter and that here I am making my second visit to review the things that I should have talked about at my first visit and to not shy away from all the things that they suggest that you talk about. Because, you know, we also don't want to, it would not be respectful of another human being to like pull a bait and switch, you know, which I've done many times in AA, where I've like given the impression that like, you know, of all sorts of things that aren't really what this book is talking about. So, okay. So, he's read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. That for me was like it's pretty clear. It says he's read the volume, you know, like that's not super confusing, but for some reason I can really go back and forth and like, I can, you know, depending on the person, I'm like, well, what if they don't read it? What if they never come back? I really liked them. You know, like I don't want to tell them to read it if they think it's too long or they seem busy, you know, all sorts of things. And really what it says is like, he's read the volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps. And I really feel like I've done this, I've given this direction to sponsees, and I've not given this direction to sponsees. And I'll say that of the people that I've given it to, I've had more success in terms of watching them go through all the 12 steps. That being said, it's not an 100% success rate. Although one time I remember talking about that with Arisa and she was like, well, we don't know that they actually read it. So we can't really be sure that it's not an 100% success rate. But in all seriousness, like, you know, I think there's like an amount of dignity that comes with allowing someone to make that choice for themselves, that you're not pulling someone along. And I also think there's a tremendous amount of like, you know, one thing that Arisa talks about a lot with me, and I've been working with Arisa, I didn't start with like my sobriety date. My sobriety date is October 7th of 2012. I've been working with Arisa almost my whole sobriety. Before she was my sponsor, she was my grand sponsor. So, you know, pretty much everything I know came from her. That's why I'm going first. So she can't steal everything I know. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, like the real thing for me here is that like the program of recovery, right? You know, like all I can say is that I've watched people who have read the book and have made this decision, right? They're talking about taking a third step and doing a fourth and fifth step and making a decision and telling a story. And I think that there is like an amount of not dragging someone in and like allowing them to get skin in the game, you know? And that's what I was saying before I went into my sobriety date is Arisa talks a lot about that. Like, how can you get someone to buy into AA? Like, and not in a weird like Ponzi scheme way. I mean, in the sense like put some of their cards on you know, buy into the game, literally, you know, like put some chips in, get some skin in the game. And really, I think there is an element of like, read this book. And if this sounds like something that might be interesting to you, then let's go through with it. And not allowing them to necessarily like hem and haw and take a really long time. It's not supposed to be like that they are able to then quote it or something in my experience, but it's really like allowing people to decide, you know, and that if they're really at this place where I have to trust that if they're really at a place where they're done and they're ready, that nothing I can do can scare them away. And if they're not, then there's nothing I can do that's right. And I've had to be told that over and over and over again, because I'm somebody who has taken on the like success of my sponsees as being a reflection of me many, many, many times. And all I can say is that the more that I stick to this, the more that I stick to letting them read the book, letting them make the decision to call me, letting them, you know, reach out to me for a practical experience and all that kind of stuff. and not insisting upon it if someone wants to consult someone else, not taking it personally. This isn't about me. You know, this is an example of me finally saying like, what are you willing to do to get and stay sober? And I'm not going to be able to do the rest for you. So here's the first thing that I'm going to suggest that you do. And let's see if you do it. And it definitely has been for me like a practical way to assess whether or not someone is really at that place of desperation, you know? So I think that's all I'll share on that paragraph.
Thanks, Anna. My name is Arisa, and I'm most definitely an alcoholic. The date of my last drink was October the 13th of 1993, and I am definitely deeply grateful for that. And it really is only because of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which contains these 12 steps, that allowed me to have a relationship with a God I wanted nothing to do with, right? And I didn't come to this because I thought it was going to be fun. When I talk about the 12th step, the first thing I always really want to do is preface this with my journey did not start with the first step. And that's why this is so important. My journey started with somebody else working the 12th step. The 12th step in somebody else's heart made it possible for me to get sober. And that's why I take this so, so seriously, right? One of the paragraphs we're not going to read, but I'm going to reference it really quickly. On the next page, on page 97, it says, never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you're doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. And at another point, you know, it's going to say that, you know, in the third step, when we're talking about the third step, it says we can only clear the ground a bit, right? When I am working my 12th step, my job is to clear the ground for that other person so they can lay their cornerstone, right? Step two is the cornerstone. And then they're going to be building this spiritual structure. And my foundation is rooted in helping others. Why? Because I am a self-centered alcoholic. I am a girl that is wired to be self-will run riot, though I usually do not think so, right? And so the kindly act once in a while is not going to treat my alcoholism. When Bill Wilson got this, you know, idea that helping other alcoholics was the way he was going to, what he was going to be doing, like this is all about his life, right? He rushed down to the Bowery in New York. I lived in New York for a long time. My art studio was right on the Bowery, and it still got drunks in it, right? He rushed down to the Bowery and he's dragging these drunks out of the Bowery and he's telling them he's got the solution, right? God will get you sober. He'll keep you sober. It's great. And none of them wanted to hear a thing about what he had to say. And they didn't want it because he was evangelizing. He was there to save those drunks. He was polishing his halo. I am not doing this because I'm such a nice person. I am not. I am doing this because I have alcoholism, that you are going to save my life, not vice versa. You know, when people talk to me, they call my sponsees, call them, they're like, none of them are stays. None of them want what I have. Okay, listen, how many have you tried with now, right? Let me know when you get to 100, because Bill worked with almost 100 people before one got sober, right? And what was different with Dr. Bob is that for the first time ever, Bill Wilson went to Dr. Bob to say, Bill Wilson. That's what, when the magic happens in Alcoholics Anonymous, you can't waste my time. The paragraph just before what we read, you know, it's talking about, you know, not chasing somebody, not spending too much time because it would deny somebody else, not because it's wasting my time, right? But I have to be convinced that you are an alcoholic. You don't have to be convinced that you are, but I do. If you're an alcoholic, then I can keep working with you, right? And until, right, and until you know, if you show me through a course of action that you don't want to do this, that's when I stop. You know, I don't care what your mouth is saying. I watch your feet. I had that conversation with two people today, two people that I love dearly who were stalled out. And I'm like, look, you know, like you're saying this, but that's not what you're doing. So I think it's really important also for me to make sure that no matter how long somebody is sober, if I'm sponsoring them, that I am still doing this. I am still being what they asked me to be. Years ago, you know, everybody's first bunches of sponsees, nobody does well the first time or accept That's not true. My experience is this. When I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 21 years old, and nobody thought I had much of a chance of staying sober. I was very blessed to walk into a very fundamental meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, is what I like to call it. And when I walked in, they guessed I was new, mostly because everybody else was like 60 or older. And then there's me, you know, right? 21 years old with a broken arm and you know, whatever. Yeah, she's new. So they assigned me a sponsor. They didn't let me choose. They didn't let me get away with it. They had me washing ashtrays and they assigned me a sponsor. And my first sponsor had 2 months sober. 2 months. I was her first sponsee. No, you know, I hope she went downhill after that. You know, no, I'm kidding. She didn't sponsor me for a long time, but you know, she did for me what needed to be done. But the reason they gave her me was not because I had a great chance of staying sober with her. It was because if she didn't start helping others, she was a chronic relapser and she was back on her ninth step and she's trying to learn about 10, 11, and 12. And they knew that if she didn't start sponsoring somebody, she would drink again. And the miracle is neither of us have ever drunk again. Neither of us have. That's how AA works. She was not, how much hope is there, especially back then, how much hope was there of a 21-year-old staying sober? Not a lot, right? Especially not with that kind of guidance. She didn't know what she was doing, but I did everything she told her to, told me to, you know? Or so my alcoholic recollection would say. When Anna pointed out, like, he's read this volume, right? She told me to do that. It was years later before I realized, like, you know, they were teaching me right out of the big book. Somehow along the way, we have stopped telling people to read the big book. We read it with them, right? But I found that my success rate went up when I said, after my first sitting down with them and doing what it says to do, if you would like to meet with me again, when somebody calls and they say, you know, would you sponsor me? First direction, read this book, right? Okay, the truth is, I don't make them read the whole book. I ask them to read the first 181 pages. I know most people do the first 164, if anything, right? But the first 181 also includes Dr. Bob's nightmare. And that's the bare minimum. And there are some who come to me the next day. It's not a lot of 181 pages is not a lot. You know, anyone who's been to college can read 181 pages in a night. So a lot of them do it in a night. And then I've had some who they don't really want me to sponsor them. They want what I have, but they don't want to do what I do, right? And that's not okay. That's not, I cannot transmit something to you by osmosis. What my job is, see, there's another common thing I think in AA. We go out looking for people we can help, right? That's not what we're supposed to do. If we could help them, they're not alcoholics. We're supposed to search out people who are beyond human aid, and we show them what we did so that God can heal them as God has healed me. And if that's not the message, if I'm not armed with the facts about myself, how can I do that? So, you know, one of the things I like to watch for in the big book is when the word fact comes up, because these are the facts I need to be armed with, right? If I'm going to talk to you about them, I better know what they are. That's why it says having had the experience yourself. So what, you know, you can't transmit what you don't have. I sponsored my first sponsee when I was, I think around 3 months sober. I moved, maybe it was four. I moved not long after I did my fifth step. And so when I started, and this girl asks me to sponsor, and I'm like, oh my God, you know, I assume I'm not going to have to do this. My sponsor's on the other side of the clubhouse, and I run across, oh my God, you know, I'm hyperventilating. And she's like, of course you can help her, right? I mean, I'm where Debbie was when I got put with Debbie. I am in the middle of my amends. I'm trying to learn about 10, 11, and 12. She said, of course you can help her. And panic was probably down my face. And she said, honey, listen. You give her everything you've got. Your job is to help her outgrow you. And then don't worry, because she's going to fire you. If you can give her that, you know, get her along the way. That's all your job is. You don't need to know anything other than what you do know. You don't need to pretend that you have more time and experience that you do. I only give, when it says, I can give practical advice only if I've had this experience myself. And in other places in the book, it'll say the same thing. We can, as long as we have solved those particular problems, right? And that's really important to me. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, which is 3 and 4, right? 5. Available. Why do we get so attached? My sponsees, right? Everybody needs my, no, they're not mine. They're not mine. You know, they are God's. They are God's. My job is to serve them. I like to really think about sponsorship. I'm not the one driving the bus. I'm not. They are in total control. My husband is the president of his company, and he hires consultants to come in and advise them on like what stocks they should buy and things. And years ago, there was one, this guy he really liked, and he was talking to me about it. He's like, you know, I don't think we're going to be able to use him anymore because we haven't taken his advice in a long time. I got to find somebody else. I don't have to fire sponsees. I simply point out that they don't have a sponsor. If they don't take my advice, then they don't have a sponsor, right? And that was the conversation I had today, right? So don't insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Over and over again, we're supposed to encourage them. If I played one small piece in your story, that's great. That's great. I still pray for every woman I've ever sponsored. I'm friends with 99% of them, right? I love to know where they are and what's happening. You know, once you're in my heart, you're in. That's it. That's my job, right? To make sure that I don't soft sell, as Anna said, this thing. Ask him to read this book in the interval. What's so hard about that, right? So if they, the other reason to do that is I want them to know what AA is and what AA is not, right? There's a lot of stuff you hear in Alcoholics Anonymous that is not actually Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I tell people is, if you're going to work with me, we're going to work the steps. And it's going to be about the big book. It's not that, and I'll use the 12 and 12 and other AA literature, but it's not going to be what you learned in therapy or in rehab or any other place. This is what you need to know. You need to know what's in that big book. Don't let anybody ever read your big book for you. Read it with you, sure, but not instead of, right? I love big book studies. I do them all the time, but not instead of. I need to have my own experience. I try to get a new big book every couple of years because what I think I know holds me back from having a new experience. So why wouldn't I give that to a sponsee, especially if they're new? If they can't read, that's another thing, but let's not go down that path. I think we should go on to the next reading.
Thank you both. That was great. The next reading is going to be on page 98. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of the dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house.
Okay, great. So thank you, Arisa. So this part, you know, I always think about, people who have done, who have clamored for these things. Honestly, that's the first thing I think about. And like the best example I can think of a girl, I remember she was my sober sister. And I think it doesn't matter. And I remember she said to me, you know, she was having a tough time getting to meetings because of where she lived, and she didn't have a car. I got sober in Boston, and there's a lot of public transportation, in case anyone didn't know. But anyways, I didn't have a car either, by the way. But she said that she needed help finding an apartment that was closer to the meeting she was going to. Meanwhile, here I am. I am pretty newly sober. I don't have a car either. I take the train and buses to get to meetings. And here I am about to help her find an apartment because it seems like a reasonable request. And all I can say is, like, if you watch the other thing she was doing, it was nothing. She wasn't doing anything. She, you know, and I think that's the biggest thing is I went to my sponsor and I was like, you know, I think I'm going to help. You know, it said we're supposed to be of service. I'm going to be helpful. And, you know, I'm on Craigslist at my job, you know, like where I'm getting paid to do things other than find this random girl an apartment. And she's like, no. I don't think it was Arisa. I think it was my current sober sister, Sarah. And she was like, no, you've got it all wrong. And, like, you know, fast forward a couple of years and I ended up in, you know, aware of some issues I have, right? But, you know, at the same time, I really got this confused where I'm supposed to be of service to alcoholics, and alcoholics, you know, like at different points in time, like myself included, like we are bottomless pits to receive service. You know what I mean? Like we are just like clamoring left and right for our needs to be met. I mean, that's why I drink. I drink because it meets the need of being unfulfilled in sobriety, right? And so it would make sense that if I go into this fellowship that's like, you're the most important person in the room, and like, we're so happy you're here. Like under certain circumstances, certain types of people hear that. And I've watched them be like, well, this seems like a really good option. This seems a lot easier. I'm just going to, you know, do whatever I can and see how I can. And here's the thing is that, like, as an alcoholic, I am very much so, I have the experience of understanding what it's like to try to pull one over on people. I actually like to do that without even realizing I'm doing it. And I don't do it in the way that I'm doing it intentionally, but what I do is I subtly put out feelers for whether or not you're like on my intellectual level. And if you prove that you're not, I immediately think you're an idiot, you know? And that's what I think that's what they're talking about here. I mean, I don't know, maybe that's just because that's the type of person I am, but like, I really needed, when I came into AA, people like Arisa and my sponsor, Sarah, like I really needed them to like hear what I was saying, things like this. No, I need this. I actually need that. You know, I really needed them to be like, no, that's not true. You know, and I really need, like I had, when I came into AA, I talked to my mom all the time. I mean, all the time, more than I do now, which is a feat. And she was my biggest cheerleader. If I hated someone, she hated them too. If I thought that I was right about something, I was, you know what I mean? Like, and that's not to say like, I mean, she's in, that makes her sound kind of terrible, but she's a wonderful person, but I fool her. That's the thing, is I fool her. I'm so deep in my delusion that she believes me. She's a perfect candidate for Al-Anon. She believes me. And so it doesn't, she gets pulled into my delusion with me. And I seem like I'm telling the truth. What I'm saying makes sense. And sooner or later, and this has literally happened to me, it makes sense to start drinking every day, because then maybe we won't have these big explosions. And I've literally gotten my mother on board with the idea, having been to the hospital multiple times for alcohol poisoning. Like, I was like, well, maybe if I drink a little bit every day. And this is my mother. She's college educated. Like, you know, she's not an idiot. But when it comes to alcoholism, she does not have the tools to combat it, you know? And the fact of the matter is, for me, is that it tells me over and over again in the book that I'm uniquely qualified to help alcoholics. And I really don't, I would be remiss to say, I don't think one of the biggest reasons why I'm qualified is because you can't BS a BSer. You know what I mean? Like, I know what the lies are, and I remember, and you know, I think like, what they're talking about here, like job or no job, wife or no wife. I would say like my card, you know, because I think everyone comes in like alcoholism keeps us feeling terminally unique. Like that's what alcoholism does. It makes me think that I have a situation that makes it impossible for this thing that's making you happy to make me happy and poor me, you know? And all I can say is that I didn't have the experience of thinking if I just had a job or if I just had a wife or a husband or whatever, but I did have the experience of being like, I'm too young, you know, or I went to college. It's not possible, you know, like, and all I can say is that, like, I think that's the same principle here is that like the things that I think make it so that I can't, that this program can't work for me right here, right now, are the things that are going to make it so that the program doesn't work for me right here, right now, you know, and I needed sponsors and people in AA to tell me, either attacking on the flank by like fellowship and showing me that that was not true, or head on telling me that's not true. You know what I mean? Those things have both been effective for me, i.e. like watching people who had the same cards that I thought made it impossible to get sober, watching them get sober, or hearing their stories that they got sober despite the circumstance I was so convinced made it impossible for me to get sober, you know, or to hear from a sponsor, like, I mean, over and over again, whether or not this happens in sobriety too. Like since getting sober, I do this with other things. I do this with character defects. I think it's along the same lines too as I'll be happy when, you know, like when I mean, I could list my own specific things, but like fill in your own blanks. When I get that job, when I get that relationship, what, you know, it's all the same kind of thing. It's placing dependence upon a future circumstance that may or may not ever happen for my happiness, right? And that's what it's saying is that we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. And that's a statement whether I'm talking about drinking alcohol and actively drinking in alcoholism, or if I'm talking about sobriety and defects of character for me. And I loved that you emphasized when you read, burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. And like he uses, Bill, when he writes, I feel like uses words like that a lot, like smash and like burn, you know, like if you burn this idea into the consciousness, like not to be whatever, but like I think of like branding, like you're just like, you're never going to not have that idea anymore. It's always going to be marked. And I have to say, like, I had people have done this for me. And one of the ways that they've done it for me is like I said, continuously, even after stopping drinking, they've continued to say to me, like, this is the same principle that's in the fourth step, basically, right? Like, it's the same exact thing that when I am disturbed, my problems are of my own making, right? And they talk about that later on at the one of the last readings and the end of the chapter. But it's the same thing. And it's like the first taste when I'm meeting with somebody new, it's the first taste of letting them know that like, no, what your problem is you. Like your problem is you thinking that you know what's standing in your way because you're the thing standing in your way. And I've had so many conversations. I mean, it took me a long time to get to the point where like I was willing to like burn this idea into the consciousness of somebody. And if they weren't willing to hear me, like if their consciousness was just blocked and they didn't want to hear what I was saying and they were just insisting and insisting and insisting, like that principle that they talked about, like let them know that you're available and that if he wants to continue, like that still stands true here for me and with all of the suggestions here. But like the reason I say that is because like there are some people that have just insisted. I can think of one sponsee in particular where it was like, I am not going to, like, it's this entity, this, you know, the IRS or like, I don't know, somewhere that they owed money. And they're the reason that I can't be happy. They're the reason that I can't be sober. And I just like, and it really what it was is that she wasn't willing to make amends to them. So in that way, yes, it did look like it was an IRS shaped problem, you know, but it was very much so her own willingness that she wasn't willing to do it. And, you know, she talked about, she was afraid of a lot of stuff to do it. Right. But here's the thing is that her fear of not of all the stuff she would lose if she didn't make it and everything like that all that happened was it continued to cut her off, you know, and she couldn't stay sober. And so I had to be the one who was willing to like hang up the phone and be like, I love you, but I'm not going to sign your death certificate. If you don't want to get this burned into your consciousness, then I can be your friend and I'll answer your calls, but I'm not going to suggest that you're doing AA because you're not. And that for me has been a huge metamorphosis in my sobriety. I have not always been like that, but this burning the idea into the consciousness, all I have to say, and then I'll let Arisa talk, is like, I had to really start to consider, like, am I doing that to the extent that people have done it for me? Am I the type of sponsor that I would want, you know? And for a long time into sobriety, the answer was no. I was like my mom's sponsor. Not totally. I wouldn't have looked that way, but enough. Enough that I didn't feel good about it. And I knew in my heart of hearts that I was not the type of sponsor that I wanted to be. And like, this is really important to me that I really try to do this and emphasize the idea that like, I'm never going to quote unquote side with you, you know, because the thing is if you're disturbed, the problem is within you. So let's find it. And it's not, I think like, I guess I have one more thing to say is that like, it has helped me immensely to know that my sponsor is always on my side. She's there. It just may not always look like that, you know? And this burning, it like doesn't always feel good, you know? Reminding them that you're the problem and that, no, it's not actually them. It's not actually your parents. You can actually get sober living at home, I promise, you know? Like, it's sometimes uncomfortable because you're so convinced of these things. And all I can say is that like, delivering it with love at the same time has always been more effective with me, and it's been what's worked for me on the receiving end. So that's all.
Thanks, Anna. So this first paragraph that we read here, this idea of not letting somebody be sponsor dependent, right? I don't want to be your higher power. I did a third step. And when I did a third step, I am giving my life to God because I don't know how to run my life. If I don't know what's best for me, how in the world can I possibly know what's best for you? My job is not to tell you what you should or shouldn't do. You know, I literally have sponsees trying to get me to tell them, you know, should I move? Should I marry this guy? Like, I can't tell you that. I don't have the answers for you, but I can help you find them for yourself, right? That I have this arrogant idea sometimes that, you know, still it's that stage. If the world and its people would just listen to me, they'd all be better. And that I've forgotten that these people are beyond human aid. They are not asking me to run their life. They are asking me to show them how to get in touch with a power that can run their life, right? That they're going to want to turn their will and their life over to. This first paragraph, I call it the fast food spirituality. That's what it is to me. If you read what it's saying there, right? I want you to hand it to me in a nifty little box. They don't want to do what I do. They don't want to, they want it half cooked. They just get to microwave it, right? I that is not what was given to me. Getting sober shouldn't be easy. It shouldn't. Because anything that comes easily to me, I also let go of easily. That's what it means to get skin in the game. You know, I don't go pick them up and drive them to my home. You figure out how to get here. That's what you need to do. It's doable. It's doable. You know, we do have public transportation here. I will do for you what you cannot do for yourself. But if you can, and I rob you of that experience, I harm you. I harm you. There's this thing that I was given years ago in my first year and a half. It was a poem about watching a butterfly come out of a cocoon. And down in Corpus Christi, Texas, where I got sober, there were a lot of butterflies. And so I grew up watching this. And it is really hard to watch these butterflies coming out. And you just really want to help them. You really, really want to help them. And the problem is if you do, their wings are never strong enough to fly. My sponsors didn't make it easy on me. In fact, they made me do all kinds of things I didn't want to do. I had to wash ashtrays and I didn't smoke. right? I had to go to my sponsor's house every weekend and play canasta. I didn't know what canasta was. It sounded like I should say, God bless you. You know what I mean? But I showed up and I was so uncomfortable through these things. And then they kept making me do things that I didn't understand and I didn't agree with. And they told me things like, honey, you've been trying to fix yourself for a very long time. How'd that work out for you? Why don't you stop? If you would stop and turn your will and your life over to the care of the doorknob, it would get better. Because at least you wouldn't be destroying things, right? I'm not saying that's a great higher power. I'm just saying that that's the girl I was. I came here to fix me. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a self-help program. It is a we help others to get out of God's way program. And if I set this up so that you become dependent upon me, my ego is going to grow. Then I am doing this to get something from you. And that cuts off the circle around the triangle. The whole point is I can't keep this unless I give it away entirely. I must do for you what was done for me or I lose this thing. Right? I need to know that I'm in all three sides of that triangle, unity, service, and recovery. And I need to make sure that you are too, right? It doesn't matter what the circumstances of my life are. It doesn't matter. I worry more about the people who don't have challenges. That's the truth. Because when you have to fight to stay here, we stay sober when we're willing to be uncomfortable. I remember talking to one sponsee and she was just complaining because, you know, all of these other people, the obsession to drink was removed and blah, 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 blah. And I told her, I said, I don't think you're going to stay. She was a chronic relapser. I said, I don't think you're going to stay sober until you're willing to be uncomfortable. It's not about getting somebody else to, you know, getting God to remove this so that you're comfortable. I came to everything in my life seeking comfort. That's why I drank, because I don't want to feel the way that I do. So I'm going to change that. I have to be willing to not get what I want. My sponsor told me, you know what, honey, I give you full permission not to like it. Now that permission gets revoked later on. In the family afterwards, it says we absolutely insist on enjoying our life. So when I'm in the 12th step, I need to learn how to insist on enjoying sponsoring people, right? So how do I do that? How do I get detached from the fruit of my labor? Just this paragraph works just as well for the sponsor as for the sponsee, right? If I'm not going to be happy until you get sober, I have a problem. Just as much as you do if you aren't getting what you want, the job, the boy, the whatever, right? Common thing, like, you know, girls get sober and they want a boyfriend. That's what happens, right? Like, they haven't worked the steps, but they're ready for a relationship, right? And it's not in the book, you know, and I'm very clear about that. And I tell them the same thing all the time. Listen, it's not suggested, blah, blah, blah. They don't care. They don't care. If they want this more than anything, I don't have to tell them, right? But the first thing that I tell them, if they're you know, really going down that path, I said, listen, you won't hear anything from me if you are doing everything that I tell you. Any relationship should be bringing me closer to God, not further away. What am I saying I need to be okay? If I put something between me and God, that becomes a hurdle, right? I need to find that path, job or no job, boy or no boy, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Physical stuff for me, right? It doesn't matter what it is that I need to learn that my problems can be opportunities in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the big, huge thing in Alcoholics Anonymous over and over again. We deal in spiritual alchemy. How do you turn a negative into a positive? God, a problem plus God is an opportunity. A problem plus me is misery, right? That's what I want to help them say. It's not about my problem. It's my problem with my problem. I can get sober no matter what. If that is what I want above all else, if I am willing to go to any length for victory over alcoholism, right? That my job is to be of maximum service to God and my fellows. And how am I doing that? Am I making sure that I am showing them how to put their hand in God's, not being the link between the two? In the beginning, yes, but that needs to end as quickly as possible. My job is to get you independent of me as quickly as possible. And with that, why don't we go on so we can at least read a little more?
Thank you both. What time we got? We have 7:46. I'm going to actually read the next two readings at once. And then I know y'all are winded enough, and that'll probably be what we do for the night. This is on page 98. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such a reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. And then the last one for tonight will be on page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. All right, y'all have about 6 minutes each. Go for it.
Okay. All right. These two paragraphs. One thing I noticed when I was reading it beforehand was just that they both talk about this word persists. And I don't know why I noticed that tonight, but I looked it up, as I've been taught to do, and it means to continue despite difficulty, opposition, or failure. And I just feel like, I don't know, it kind of reminds me, it's like principally aligned with, continuous failure, trying to get people sober at the Bowery, you know, that like, they're not actually failures, because like, I'm still trying, you know, and like, I don't know, things like that have always helped me, like trying and practicing are the same things. Right? Like, so if I have a spiritual practice, it's just that I'm trying to be spiritual on a consistent basis. You know what I mean? I don't know. That has always helped me. But so, and I think it's related to these because it's talking about the domestic problem. And for first thing I want to say is, I think it's directly related to something Arisa touched on before, which is the idea of having had the experience yourself, you can give much practical advice. And it talks about that, like in subsequent chapters, like the family afterward and stuff, like, if you have been successful, then you can give your experience with that. It says there may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. I just want to be clear. Like, I don't general, even if I have a sponsee who has children, who has doesn't have custody of them or something, I only ever talk to them about alcoholism. I never venture to say that I know what it's like to not have custody of my children. I don't. I have no experience with that. I can point them to people in AA who either have children or things of the like, but like, I never give advice on how to have a relationship with a child because I don't know, you know, like I think sometimes it can be tempting to like, to know everything, you know, like think you should know everything. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Like you think you should have answers for everything, but I don't. like, I don't, and not only that, but like, if I don't have experience with something, I definitely don't have an answer, because I'm not supposed to be offering my advice about experiences I haven't had. Always gets me into trouble. Always gets me angry at people who do it to me. So I think that's important. And then I'll just say too, I think it's striking too, like after he's saying that, you know, he's saying like he should proceed to put these principles into action at home. There's a lot of helpful directions on that, especially in the family afterward and to wives. That is if he is lucky enough to have a home, you know, and I think that that's, I don't know, it just struck me like it's like a moment of like, you should remember that even if you have strained relations at your house, if you have a home, you should be grateful. You know, that that's not everybody's experience. And that if you get to make reparations with your family, it means you have a family to make reparations with, you know, and that is in and of itself, like, you know, an opportunity, like Arisa was talking about, you know, if I let it be one. And then it talks about those family may be at fault. And one thing I think it's the biggest thing I read of here is like to keep my eyes on my own page, that it's not my job to take other people's inventory. And I've been given the direction many times of like trying to make a list of what people are doing right, because I have a tendency to make lists in my head without meaning to of what people are doing wrong. And I don't know, it just struck me here, like I've been also taught to read for directions in the book. And so this is a direction to me: argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. And so it just struck me, if that's a direction, like you can also take its opposite as being a direction, right? That like asset finding should be my mission, right? Like I should be looking for where you're behaving well. I should be looking for when my mom is being, you know, motherly. I should be looking for these things rather than continuously tearing you down based on what I think the type of person you are is, if that makes sense. Like my preconceived ideas about what types of people are keeps them in a certain framework in my mind. But if I readjust it and I start trying to notice the opposite, if I start trying to notice new pathways, they're gonna start to look different, you know? And that's what I think it's talking about in the next page, where it says, again, if persisted, right? And if for a few months, so if my behavior has changed for a few months, the effect on my family will be great. And I don't really know if they mean that I will be a better person to be around. That's certainly my experience. But I also think like it really does wipe the, you know, the wipers on my glasses, like the effect on my family, the effect, like if you think of it like an Instagram filter, like the effect is different because I see them totally differently. They're like a completely different family. All of a sudden it's like, you know, yeah, they still do all that stuff, but they also do all this wonderful stuff. And it's like, what happened? And it's like, that's what God has done for me. That's where Anna cannot fix it, you know, that God has come and done for me what I can't do for myself. And I think I'll just leave the second paragraph because I already talked about the word persist and I don't want to take up too much more time.
Thanks, Anna. So I want to point out that at the end of the paragraph that we left off on, it says that the only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. And then the paragraph Anna just focused on is all based on that trust. And the steps are designed to take us from belief to trust. I can believe that a tightrope walker can get across just fine. But if I really trusted him, I'd let him carry me, right? And that's what the steps do. We aren't ready to let God carry us at that point. So in this paragraph, this is talking, it's talking about 9 through 12, right? This guy has not got a lot of time. They used to do the steps very quickly, right? When he's talking to the family, he's making amends. And then a much more important is putting those principles into action at home, right? This is a practical program of action. We don't care what you're saying. Old AA joke. How do you know when an alcoholic is lying? His lips are moving, right? So I don't care what you have to say. They are so tired of hearing us, right? Amends are about, for the first time in my life, I'm willing to be on the hook and I am going to do what I can to repair it. That's what reparations are. Once I've done as many repairs as I possibly can, then I'm going to put the principles into action to continue to improve, to find opportunities to be kind and loving. Love and tolerance is our code. Their faults are not discussed in the ninth step, and neither are they at any other time. right? Because if I am disturbed, the problem is within me. Always, always back on me, right? And I can't do that if I'm not trusting God, right? The musts and shoulds, very important in the big book. I always highlight all the shoulds and the musts, and there are a bunch of them in there, right? You must jump out of the airplane, but you should use a parachute. So if you think about them like that, right? It must be done if any results are to be expected, any at all, right? It doesn't matter how difficult it is. I need to make sure it's only me I'm concentrating on. Argument and fault finding, that there's nothing there that speaks of God. And that's not to say I become a doormat. It means that I don't need boundaries. AA is not about boundaries. You hear the word boundaries all the time in AA. It drives me crazy. I hate it. You know, boundaries are to keep you out. Boundaries are about you have to change so I'm okay. That is not AA. AA says you can do whatever you want. You have a right to be a jerk. Okay? You have a right to do anything you want. Just like every meeting has the right to be wrong, so does every person in the whole world. Now, if I stick around, that's on me. We teach people how to treat us, right? And if I say, kick me, please, then you think, you won't even know you've done anything to hurt me. It's my job to say, ouch, if you step on my toes without socking you in the nose. You see, I had all these buttons installed a long time ago. And I thought that if you did certain things, I had to hit you. I didn't know that there was something different. Alcoholics Anonymous is all about rewiring that stuff so that you can come and you can push that button, but it's not connected anymore. And you can do whatever you want to do. You see, the same, I tell my kids this all the time. On a good spiritual hair day, they can do something. And I'm going to think, poor kid, they're having a rough day, that, you know, she's a senior in high school and she's going to school virtually. Man, that is tough, right? But on a bad spiritual hair day, I want to tell her what for. And it's the same thing she did. It has nothing to do with her. It has everything to do with my spiritual condition. Everything to do with that. That is the demonstration that must happen in my home. Why is it we can behave in the room with Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's okay for me to misbehave everywhere else, right? If I persist in this, if I watch me, and I clean up my messes, then little by little, the family may see their own defects. Not necessarily, but here's the thing. It's like a recipe. I don't know if any of you guys like to cook, but if you forget to put the sugar in something, you know, you're making cookies and you forget the sugar, you got a mess. And it doesn't taste very good, right? If you add the sugar back in, it's a whole different thing. If I change, they have to change how they treat me. Because I am different. It takes time, but it must happen. It is impossible for it not to happen, right? So little by little, my attachment to, you're late. I know that I've been drinking and making a mess out of things forever, but you know, like I'm ready for you to be different. I did much to make them so. That's what it says in other parts of the book, right? I need to make sure that I am thinking about what is it like for them to have experienced me? I mean, I would never want to be married to me. And I got married sober, okay? You know, I still wouldn't want to be married to me. Like, I know that I wouldn't have that kind of tolerance. The next paragraph, both you and the new man must, there's another one of those must walk day by day in the spiritual path of spiritual progress, right? If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power. Okay. Follow the dictates. This is where I got, you know, I got real confused and I know we're out of time. I got real confused by that. The word dictate, it means when somebody dictates something, they are speaking and I am listening. It is listening to God. Follow the voice of God. If it doesn't speak of love, it doesn't speak of God, right? It's not what I should do. It's what I'm listening to. Am I bringing love into the game? Love and tolerance is our code. that's what I bring into everything, then it doesn't matter what. I will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. When I, you know, before I met my husband, when I met him, I was living in a room that was 8.5 feet by 11, right? I was poorer than a church mouse, but I was happy. I was happy. Things are different now. I've got a whole lot of stuff, but it's not the conditions of my life that make me happy, joyous, and free. I am sure that God wants me happy, joyous, and free today. And I hang on to that. And I absolutely insist on enjoying my life. And I do that like through this. You help me remember what this is all about. You save me one day at a time. And with that, I thank you for my sobriety.
Thank you both so much. That was great. In a couple minutes, I'm gonna give everybody the chance to mute. I just did one thing. I posted our PayPal link. I'm going to read the seventh tradition statement, which states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While each while contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. A common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Very quickly, I can take a super fast announcement. If anybody has one, go ahead with that, and you're allowed to unmute yourself.
Can I share one real quick?
Yeah, yeah.
So I actually head the area literature committee that where I am, and we are doing a workshop, and many of you may know that they're talking about, you know, revising AA literature on October 5th from 7 to 8 p.m. One of our delegates who's been on the literature committee last year and will be next year, he's from Area 48 in New York, is going to be talking about how AA literature is created and revised in Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you have any questions about like plain language or what's going to happen with the big book or how do pamphlets get made, I'd love to have you there and be happy to share the information.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available right here in this room after the meeting. Please feel free to talk to us. And if you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net. In closing, I'm going to just go ahead and unmute everybody. Yeah, you have the privilege to unmute yourself now if you guys want to pray with us and then thank the speakers. We can do a little virtual hug here, but take a quick moment of silence followed by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.